folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here. I think I've got a really interesting show for you this morning. We have Lakin Jordahl, and Lakin has been working on the project for the Center of Biological Diversity along the wall. So what's the impact of the wall on the cultures and the animals, the whole environment? How is it impacting it? If you see pictures of it, it's a really huge construction project. So we'll be talking to Lakin in just a couple of minutes. But Jay Ruby contacted me. He's part of Prescott Indivisible, and he wanted to talk about a campaign against our least favorite congressional person in Arizona, Paul Gosar. So, Jay, tell us a little bit about what you're up to.
Yeah, well, I think he's already done it for himself, but we want to let the world know, and we want to make sure that everybody recognizes Paul Gosar as the poster child of sedition for his role in the events of January 6th. And what we have done is we have a group called Remove Paul Gosar, and we have a petition out. We'd love you to sign the petition. You can go to removepaulgosar.com, and then you'll see a tab there, and you can go and be able to go and sign the petition. But the real thing we want to do is to make sure that people are aware of what Paul Gosar did. And there were a lot of events leading up to January 6th where he was rallying people to dispute the election without evidence, of course. He was building on the big lie that Trump had. And he was organizing with Ali Alexander to do the Stop the Steal events. Numerous ones happened in Arizona. There was funding that helped get those people to Washington, D.C. There are pictures of him with different legislators flying to Washington, D.C. I think he even had a tweet that said, D.C., here we come, with himself and former legislator Anthony Kern on the plane. There are numerous videos of him getting crowds riled up for this event. The day of the event, he tweeted Joe Biden, "I want your concession on my desk tomorrow morning. Don't make me come over there." That's a veiled threat. And it's time to hold Paul Gosar accountable. And what we're doing at removepaulgosar.com, and you can also follow on Twitter at hashtag removepaulgosar, and it's useful to follow Prescott Indivisible on Twitter at indivisprescott, is we're going to be leading some actions to go after the people who fund Paul Gosar. Because this is a public relations campaign. There is no legal mechanism to remove or recall a congressman in Arizona. So we have to create enough recognition around Paul Gosar's, I would say, criminal activity that there is cover for him to be removed from the House. And that's going to take probably about 70 Republican votes in addition to the Democrats in the House. That is a public relations campaign.
Because as a practical thing, you're probably not going to get rid of Paul Gosar. He is up for election in 2 years. So I think the more people know about Paul Gosar, hopefully that'll have some impact.
Well, it's also it's a question of national, because you have to get you could if people really see what he has done and how he contributed to the treasonous activity of January 6th, and there is a there are people in the country who don't like that who are Republicans. There are Republicans here in Arizona that I'm talking to that don't like it. And if that can be put in the correct light, I think you could see people move now to say, we don't want this man in Congress. Waiting for redistricting and waiting for reelection, he's a threat as long as he's in Congress. And so the important thing now is to make him front and center, and in particular to go after the people that fund him and connect his seditious activities to their support.
What's the name of the website against Jay for people who want to contact you, want to be involved in this campaign?
It's simple to remember, removepaulgosar.com. And you can also, if you do the hashtag on Twitter, removepaulgosar, there's a lot of information. And you can follow at Prescott Indivisible.
I have one last question for you. It's very, very serious, which is Paul Gosar the worst congressman in the United States or the second worst?
You know, there's a lot of competition for that for that title right now, and I don't know if we have objective standards of measurement to determine the true winner of that crown.
All right, so...
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Stephen, and I'm really glad that you have Lycan Jordahl on, who's done some great work on what's been going on down at the southern border.
Great. Thanks for being with us. Keep us an update. If you get anywhere close to getting rid of Paul Gosar, I will be overjoyed and jumping up and down in the air.
Yeah, there are some great videos at thirdeyepushpin.com. ThirdEyePushPin.com, spelled out ThirdEyePushPin.com, which show his various misdeeds, and they're also at the Twitter thread on Prescott Indivisible. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
That's fine, Jay. Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
So, Lycan, am I pronouncing that right, or is it Lycan?
No, you got it right. Lycan. Thanks for asking.
Didn't get a chance to ask you before the show. One of the center pieces of Trump's campaign, starting back when he was elected and even before he was elected, was campaigning, was this wall. He was going to build a great, beautiful wall from sea to shining sea. And this huge project, and we can go into the details, but I think... One of the things that people don't think about, well, I guess first, update us on what's happened. You know, Joe Biden gets elected. Joe Biden says he's not going to further extend the wall. What's happening along the wall? You're down in Tucson. You go down to the borderlands area. I will say that Lincoln has one of the most exciting job titles I ever heard, which is Borderlands Campaigner. And he works with the Center for Biological Diversity. He has a extensive background in the National Park Service, all kinds of wildlife fellowships, and the study of ecological systems. And your work focuses on wildlife and ecosystems all along the border. And, of course, there you are. They're building the wall. So what's the state now, Lycan?
Yeah, well, this week, for the first time, at least in the last, you know, almost 3 years, all wall construction across the southern border has come to a pause. And it was pretty surreal being out at these construction sites that I've been visiting over the course of my last 2.5 years with the center since they started building in Arizona. And for once, it's peace and quiet down there. You know, the wall has been built across all four border states. It's not the giant wall from sea to shining sea that we heard about in the campaign, but about 450 miles of border wall have gone up, built by the Trump administration, and Arizona undoubtedly has been hit the hardest of all the border states. We've got about 200 miles of wall built across our southern border, which is now effectively cutting off more than half of our state from habitat south of the border in Mexico. So the situation is dire. There's a huge amount of restoration and remediation work that needs to be done. And currently, Biden has issued this two-month-long pause in construction. That's a good thing. It's a good start. But until Biden cancels these contracts for good and sends these construction workers packing, there is still an imminent threat to wildlife refuges, national park lands, sacred tribal areas, all along the southern Arizona border. So we're calling on the Biden administration to cancel these contracts and make this pause permanent.
And do you think that's likely, Lincoln? What's your take on that?
You know, we were really heartened by just how quickly Biden acted on this positive construction. It's clear that they understand the severity of the situation. You know, Biden and Harris were in Arizona just days before the election, and they met with all of the tribal leaders from our state. And I know, you know, they understand the severity of the damages caused by the wall. They listened to testimony from the chairman of the Tohono O'odham Nation, who has had their sacred sites blasted and bulldozed to make way for this ridiculous wall through their ancestral land. So I do think that Biden and Harris both deeply understand that this issue is significant, and that, you know, the wall certainly is not a legitimate solution to any sort of immigration issues. It certainly does not stop people or drugs from crossing the border. That has been made abundantly clear by numerous videos that we've seen. And yeah, I'm hopeful. You know, I'm really hopeful that they will cancel these contracts and send the construction crews packing. I am a little bit nervous. I know Border Patrol is already trying to argue that, oh, most of these walls are already complete. You know, they've had contracts to build a few hundred miles in Arizona, and they've built right up to that end mark. There's only a few dozen more miles to finish. But if these contracts are allowed to be completed, we will see the best remaining corridors for endangered jaguars between Arizona and Sonora sealed off. So it's not an exaggeration to say that the fate of jaguars in Arizona is very much in Joe Biden's hands at this point.
I was down in, I always have the name wrong, Oregon Pipe National Park. Do I have it right? I always think of it as pipe organ, but I guess that would be a little bit weird for a national park. It's an extraordinarily beautiful area. I've been down there right on the border, and when I was there many years ago, a couple of decades ago, there was just a little, you know, waste station and, you know, a little barrier and between the United States and Mexico, and the two countries, the landscapes just flow together. And when you're up in the mountains above the border, it's extraordinarily beautiful. You look, I don't know how far down into Mexico over this vast rolling plain and mountains in the distance. It's quite beautiful. And it's a very wild area. So when you mention jaguars, it's one of the few places where they can survive in the modern Arizona, right, is coming back and forth across the border.
Yeah, Oregon Pipe is such a spectacular place. And, you know, I was lucky enough to work with the National Park Service at Oregon Pipe, looking at the biggest threats facing wilderness and wildlife in that area. And I worked there right as Trump was coming into office. And it was just surreal because at that time, you know, nobody really knew if the threat of the wall was going to materialize. All of my coworkers and colleagues just, I think they just thought it wasn't possible that Trump could actually build a wall through this place because it's a designated wilderness area. It's a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. It's one of the most stunning places in our state. And I think some folks were a little bit naive. And it just breaks my heart because now, 4 years later, I drive back to Oregon Pipe to document the damage. And at this point, the wall has ripped all the way across the southern boundary of that national monument. And it cut off all wilderness lands there from land across the border in Mexico. And like you talk about, you know, you look across the border, it's the same land on both sides of the border. It's the same habitat. It's the same wildlife that wander back and forth across this invisible line, just as they've done for millennia. And ripping this impassable metal barrier through one connected ecosystem, I mean, it rips wildlife habitat in two, and it leads to a host of ecological problems, including inbreeding and diminishing sources of food and water. And especially as climate change continues to wreak havoc on Arizona, this habitat fragmentation is disastrous for wildlife. So we will certainly be working to tear down sections of wall in places like Oregon Pipe because we desperately need to reopen wildlife corridors and let animals find the food and the water and the shelter that they need to survive.
So I'd like to take a side movement here and ask you about habitat, breaking up of habitat, because it's not just the wall, the highways and stuff. We're breaking up all the corridors where wildlife, I guess, across the country used to move back and forth. We're interfering. Now there's some solutions up in the U.S. The wall is kind of an absolute line. Some of the highways now have underpasses for herds of elk and stuff. But talk about habitat fragmentation, what that does to wildlife.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, there's so many different threats facing wildlife in Arizona and the United States, and on a global scale. And one of the biggest threats is the loss of habitat. And that occurs by habitat being destroyed or fragmented, cut off, as we're seeing with the border wall. Essentially, you know, in Arizona, in the Sonoran Desert, it's the hottest and driest corner of our state. And you think about, you know, if you're a mule deer in the summer and you're at Oregon Pipe, there's maybe a couple reliable water sources anywhere in that entire region of desert. So if you need water, you know, you've evolved to understand where to migrate to find that water. And wildlife in the desert, they migrate vast distances to find what they need to survive. And now, for the first time in evolutionary history, there is a linear barrier across the entirety of that national monument that will stop the natural migrations of species dead in their tracks. And we're already seeing the impacts of this. In August, we saw a picture turn up of a mule deer that had died in the shadow of the border wall. And this was, you know, at the peak heat that we've seen in the last year, we had very little monsoon rains this year. And this deer was presumably walking south, trying to access a watering hole on the outside of Sonoita in Sonora, just south of the border. And I just imagine it pacing back and forth along this metal barrier, just totally confused. You know, these animals have not evolved to understand something like a border wall or any other sort of linear barrier. And that's where the deer died. And that was a direct result of us building this ridiculous structure that defies nature, that defies logic. And I fear that so many other wildlife will meet a similar fate as long as these barriers stay up and as long as they continue to fragment habitat and stop wildlife from finding the resources that they need to survive.
Yeah, there's a beautiful spring there I remember visiting. And also the canyons, folks, are filled when I was there with bird song, and extremely rugged, as Lakin is saying, extremely rugged and dry. I was there in a summer thunderstorm, which was amazing. But it is extremely beautiful country, and I think it's a country that people have sort of stopped visiting, from what I hear. People stopped visiting Oregon Pipe, and concern about immigration, about drug smuggling, and so forth and so on. But I don't think there was ever any danger there. And in the old days, you used to be able to just drive right across the border to the little Mexican town there. And I didn't do it because, you know, most of the people are going down there to buy tequila. But, you know, it was an open border. And in fact, when I was young, the border all along Texas and Mexico was an open border. People went back and forth. Families lived on both sides of the border. Trade went back and forth sort of freely. And I think we've seen a real collapse of that. Lakin is talking about the impact of fragmentation on wildlife, but there's a fragmentation that occurs to people, right? If you're a member of the same tribe, suddenly to get to visit your grandmother is an ordeal.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there are so many impacts of this wall that are devastating for our communities, for our livelihoods, for our well-being. Indigenous people along the border have absolutely suffered at the hands of this administration. I've got a number of friends who are Tahanatham, so there's the native people to that area where Oregon Pipe currently is. And that tribe straddled the borderline. So they've got an entire segment of their tribal population that is south of the border in Mexico, and that means they do not have American citizenship, which is just ridiculous. You think about this border being imposed upon your community, and a segment of your community now does not get the same citizenship as everybody else, and they're not even allowed to cross back in to visit their ancestral sites without being questioned and having flashlights shined into their faces. I mean, this is a human rights violation. A lot of these folks on the Optum Nation have to go through Border Patrol checkpoints just to go grocery shopping, to go to the hospital to seek medical care. I mean, the impacts of border militarization are severe on a civil liberties and human rights scale, as well as the environmental damage that they cause. And, of course, those of us who spent time down on the border, we know that these communities are deeply, deeply connected. When I worked at Big Bend in Texas, we would go shopping across the border in Ojinaga, Chihuahua. When I worked at Oregon Pipe, we would go out to eat in Mexico. Sometimes I'd drive across the border for lunch. And these communities do not just stop at this invisible line. And I think that simple fact is something that politicians in D.C. and even some of our own members of Congress in Arizona just do not understand. They're not capable of understanding that these communities, just like the wildlife and the wild places, are deeply interconnected. And there is no us versus them. We are all the same. We all come from the same land, and we all belong to the same community.
Yeah, the borderlands are a special place, and you're absolutely right. You used to, you know, from El Paso, you used to drive right across the border to have lunch. You know, it was like no big deal. It was, and everybody did it. And the amount of trade going back and forth, and it really is two-way. And it was two-way here in Arizona. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of Mexican folks coming to the U.S. and buying goods, and then a bunch of Americans pouring over the border and buying goods on the other side. There was such an amazing amount of interaction and commercial activity on a retail level, not just these giant trucks rolling through, but people went back and forth. Now, when they went to build the wall, they used something called the Real ID Act of 2005. Which said that you could waive all laws with regard to things like the environment in order to do like homeland security things. Tell us a little bit about that. How can they waive this is a protected area by U.S. law, by international law. How can they build a wall straight through it? And understand, folks, the wall is there, but then there's a huge graded area on this side of the border, where everything has been ripped up. You'll see pictures of these 100-year-old saguaro cactuses just chopped to bits and knocked over and graded away. And so it's not just this fence, this wall. It's the area to the wall, which is now all ripped up. But explain to folks a little bit how they use this act in order to get the legal right to do this.
Yeah, well, the simple fact is that as these walls have ripped through protected public lands in Arizona and sacred tribal areas, even tribal burial grounds, the government has not been following even a single environmental or cultural resource protection law. They have unilaterally waived away all of the rights and legal protections that wildlife and border communities are supposed to have under U.S. law in order to rush this project through. And they have done that using this tiny provision tucked into the 2005 Real ID Act that allows them to waive any law that they deem necessary to build border walls and associated roads for that project. Clearly, this is unconstitutional. And we have been litigating over this waiver for a long time now. We're actually working with Congressman Raul Grijalva and others to repeal this waiver of law, because what it results in is that communities along the border do not have the same protections as every other community in America. And that is fundamentally unjust, especially when you consider that border communities are predominantly communities of color, they're working class communities. This waiver of law is a textbook example of environmental racism. So we've seen these border walls go up with no compliance to the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act. We've seen Native American gravesites be disturbed and bulldozed because the government has waived the Native American Graves Protection Repatriation Act. And this waiver, this tiny little bit of legislative text from the 2005 Real ID Act, is the single piece that has allowed for all of this unchecked destruction to occur. So now, as we move forward, we will be working on a campaign to repeal that tiny bit of legislative text and make sure that communities and wildlife along the border have the same legal protections as everybody else in the country. And if we do that, if we're able to repeal that waiver authority, we can basically assure that no president will ever be able to inflict this much damage on the borderland this fast with no accountability.
I think if you look, even just look at the name, folks, the Real ID Act, you can see this was a tiny provision stuck in there that's now, gosh, Lakin gotten magnified into the reason to build this whole wall, or the legal right to build this wall through anybody's property, any kind of environment. Environmental damage doesn't matter. Legally, they can just do it. Based on the small piece of legislation, or the small piece of a larger bill that I don't even think people focused on, probably. I haven't looked at any of the documentation of what the discussion was back then, but I wonder.
No, you're right. People definitely did not know what they were voting on. And we've done an extensive review of, you know, the debate on the House floor around this bill. This provision was hardly talked about at all. And when it was talked about, the Republicans had pointed to lawsuits around the Endangered Species Act and the National Environmental Policy Act stalling border wall construction in California. So they just wanted to expedite wall construction. And it was conveyed as if this law only applied to these certain areas of wall. And I can guarantee you that the people who voted yes on the Real ID Act, they did not understand the gravity of this legislative text. And they certainly didn't understand that they would be stripping away all of these legal protections from the millions of people who live along the U.S.-Mexico border.
I wanted to ask you, just as an aside, I read your article on Starr County, Texas, about the possible impact of the wall along. This is you better describe it better than I can. Did that wall ever get built in that section of Texas? What happened after your article was written?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, I was down in South Texas in the Rio Grande Valley and just working with incredible community organizers and landowners there who were quite literally fighting to save their homes and their properties from condemnation for the border wall. Because in Texas, the government builds the wall inland, north of the river, so they have to seize all of these parcels of private land, including homes and family farms. And I paddled down a section of the Rio Grande there, which just completely blew my mind, and it totally stuck with me. You know, I felt like I was on a wild and scenic river. We were watching birds splash into the water. We were watching these thousand-year-old Montezuma cypress trees go by as we're paddling down the Rio Grande. I had no idea that the U.S. border could be so lush and tropical. It was just mind-blowing to me. And that very section, that area that just took my breath away, has now been walled off by a border wall.
Oh, it has. Government. They did build it.
It has. Yeah, and you know the way that they've done it in Texas, it's so ridiculous and piecemeal, because basically they'll acquire certain tracts of land and then they'll build there. So they'll build a mile and a half. The first places to go were the wildlife refuges, because they're, you know, in federal hands, which is so unbelievably cruel, because the government ostensibly controls wildlife refuges to protect them. But what we saw the Trump administration do was use that fact that the government owns the land as the first reason to destroy them. So the first places to go have been wildlife refuges, the national park lands. But as things stand in Texas right now, we have seen quite a bit of wall go up in Starr County. But there's a lot of places where courageous landowners have fought the government tooth and nail. They've refused to give up the property. And now that Biden is in office, we certainly hope that his Department of Justice will drop all of those lawsuits and ensure that not another foot of wall is built in those areas. So we're hopeful. But again, there's just so much damage to mourn, to grieve, and so much work to do to restore all that Trump has destroyed.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It was part of his campaign from the very beginning, wasn't it? And like you said, a lot of people didn't believe he would be able to do it. A lot of us didn't hope. We hoped he wouldn't get elected. That was a shock. It's not just Trump administration, though. It's also, frankly, the Republican Party that rolled over and did basically anything he wanted, whether it made sense or not, because they're afraid of his supporters. So the Republican Party and the people who support it are unfortunately also a part and partisan of this of the problem of Donald Trump. We've got a new administration, and so not only, I think if I read you right, not only does the wall sort of has to be stopped, but there has to be certain corridors for wildlife to move through it, and the area needs to be sort of restored. What's most important?
Yeah, no, great question. I think most importantly, we have to understand that these walls don't stop anyone from crossing. Within days of the Trump wall going up in California, I saw rope ladders hanging over it. People are climbing right over this billion-dollar structure in a matter of seconds. I think especially appealing to our friends and our family members who are across the aisle, we have to start with the basic fact that the wall does nothing to keep us safe. It does nothing for border security. It does nothing to address the root causes of immigration and wealth inequality. So we have to move into this discussion with that point with total clarity. when it comes to actually finding justice for border communities, we absolutely need to work with wildlife scientists and experts to identify areas where the wall needs to come down in order for species not to go extinct. Like I mentioned, if these walls are completed through Arizona's rugged mountainous corridors, that's the end of jaguar recovery in Arizona. And we're talking about a conservation initiative that people have dedicated their entire lives to. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars of federal funding going into conserving jaguars and jaguar habitat. All of that wiped off the face of the map if these walls go up. So certainly we want to make sure that walls come down in critical habitat for endangered jaguars. We also want to look at areas where walls cross naturally flowing rivers and waterways. The San Pedro River in southeastern Arizona crosses the border near the town of Sierra Vista. And that river, it gets totally churning during monsoons. We're talking like the size of the Colorado River, 10,000 cubic feet per second when it floods. And right now there's a giant structure blocking that waterway, blocking that migratory corridor for wildlife. And we certainly want to see the wall taken down across that river for wildlife, but also for public safety. Because if this river floods, it could push the wall over and send floodwaters just ripping through ranch lands and small communities in southern Arizona. And I think perhaps most importantly, we have to talk and work with tribal leaders. We have to talk with the Otom leaders, the Kumeyaay, the Kokopa, and consult with them and see which areas they feel like it's necessary for restoration to occur. I think we absolutely need to compensate tribal communities and tribal members for all of the sacred sites and ancestral lands that have been destroyed with no consultation. And I think, we have to involve the voices of border communities, of people who actually live along the border, and listen to them. What do they want to see for justice? How do we restore their legal protections and their rights? And how do we make things right? Because people along the border have it's been a really difficult 4 years for those of us who live down here.
Immigration is one of the great international issues. there are different figures on the number of displaced people and the number of refugees in countries. I think Turkey is the leader. I think it's got several million people, displaced people. The popularity of the idea of the wall was protection of the United States and its sovereignty from people just flooding over. And we've seen caravans being organized in Central America of thousands of people. There's no reason why the caravans couldn't be tens of thousands of people and just roll over into the United States. So many people are unconcerned about this, and many people are probably over-concerned. And the people who are concerned were very supportive of the wall. They liked the idea. It may have been a childish idea, but it, like a lot of Trump's childish idea, it appealed to a certain segment of the population. So what would you say to those folks who are worried about a flood of immigrants into the United States, and immigration's now at the highest level since the 1920s, and every time it gets to a certain height of level, we get these know-nothing groups, these anti-immigrants, and frankly, you can see them all over the country. It's leading to the rise of the radical right. It's bringing it's kind of the energy that's driving the expansion of so many right-wing and extremist neo-Nazi parties. So what could you tell folks who are concerned about this issue and the wall?
Yeah, no, great question. You know, I think first off, for those people who are so deeply concerned with poor folks trying to come into our country and look for a better life, I think, you know, what we want to do is help these people practice the right not to migrate. You know, people don't walk across an entire continent, climb over a wall, and wander 100 miles through a desert being chased by Border Patrol because they want to be here. Nobody wants to leave their homes. Nobody wants to leave their families and their cultures. It's not like people are just planning and scheming to come here and come into America because there's some sort of malice in their hearts. These people are simply trying to survive. And I think, you know, if it was serious about addressing the causes of immigration, if the right was really serious about not having more immigrants come into our country, they need to help these people stay in their homes. And we need to invest money into these governments in Latin America, in Guatemala, in El Salvador, in Honduras. We need to help these people practice the right not to migrate. And that's exactly the opposite of what the Trump administration has done. We need to vastly expand aid to these countries. And I think, frankly, you know, we as the U.S. have an obligation to do that, because we played a significant role in destabilizing a lot of Latin American governments that has led to the current amount of insecurity in these countries today. So I think we have to reframe that discussion. Obviously, a wall is not going to solve anything. And I think people glom onto this idea of a wall because it is such a simple idea. And that's why Trump glommed onto it too. Apparently, you know, he couldn't remember his own immigration platform. So his advisors just said, remember this chant, build the wall. And unfortunately, right, that has led to so much being destroyed here on the border.
So Central America is in deep trouble, and climate change is going to make, unfortunately, areas of Central America, unless they're protected somehow, very difficult places to live, if they can be lived in at all. And this is going to cause more instability. What kind of aid? I like that idea. I think our Republican friends are not going to want to spend the money to actually help people stay in Guatemala. But it seems like such a reasonable solution to support the civil society in these countries, support civil society in such a way that they make them more livable. And it's hard to see what the objections would be besides economic, Lakin, to this idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of it, I think, has to do with unfair trade agreements that we have enacted that have allowed U.S. companies to extract wealth from these countries and take profits with us across the border while not allowing people and labor to cross the border with that capital. So I think, you know, I think we need to definitely look at the trade agreements we have with these countries and make sure that they are getting a fair share of the profits from these resources that we continue to extract, whether that's in the form of fruit imports or mining imports. I think we have to have much bigger conversations about that. And certainly, if we want to stop a huge flow of people coming to our borders from the global south, we have to address climate change. It's not that complicated. And that's a fundamental piece of allowing people to practice the right not to migrate, is making sure that they still have access to a livable climate. So we're excited about a lot of the policies the Biden administration is implementing. Obviously, there's so much more that needs to be done. But definitely, it feels like for the first time in 4 years, we are back on the right track. And maybe, just maybe, there's a chance that we can save life on Earth.
Yeah, I think that some people are not surprised about the connection between climate change and this vast displacement. 10 billion people, or I've forgotten. I don't have my stats before me. But the massive displacement worldwide caused by climate change. And if you're worried about immigration, if you're worried about what it takes is a very proactive attitude to go out and help other countries and to take a little bit of a hit in terms of getting rid of some of these unfair trade agreements and these massive interventions that we've done in Central America to support all kinds of oligarchies and to encourage democracy in a sort of a peaceful way. I think people underestimate the value of soft power. They underestimate the value of doing something about climate change and the rest of these issues in order to improve the situation with something like immigration. Well, Lincoln, thanks for being with us. We've got only a couple of minutes left. I've got some announcement. First, the door auction is going on, and it's lasting through February 10th. Go on the door websites, Democrats of the Red Rocks, and look at all this wonderful stuff. And it's just a very, very cool idea to raise money with an online auction. Door breakfasts are also continuing on Zoom. The next one is February 18th. They haven't announced their speakers yet. Door has a film club. The first batch of films, The Year of Living Dangerously and The Quiet American, based on a Graham Greene novel, really great group. I'm thinking they're going to have a bunch more of good films coming. We'd also like to suggest that everybody visit the Verde Valley Independent Democrats website, our website, and they visit the Verde Valley Democrats website, and that they look at what's going on over in the Prescott area. We need to keep a strong flow of information about what's happening. There are a lot of events now, and as the number of people getting vaccine shots goes up, maybe eventually we'll be able to go back to real meeting. I'm sitting in a studio that's filled with empty chairs, and I saw a picture on Facebook, one of those, you know, 5 years ago thing, and we had six people sitting in here. It was crowded, but it was nice. So a lot of things will come back. This and all our other shows are available on podcast at vvid.org, vvid.org. Visit us there.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.